You're Going to Die, the podcast, is brought to you by YG2D, a 501c3 nonprofit bringing diverse communities creatively into the conversation of death and dying, inspiring life by unabashedly sourcing our shared mortality. To find out more, visit www.yg2d.com.
Welcome to my dreams, everybody, because this episode is a dream come true. I've been waiting for a chance to produce a live event in person that we can record for the podcast. And guess what? This is it, baby. You know, I do want to be really honest with you about this episode and something I feel about live events recorded for a podcast. All my favorite podcasts, it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite to have that version of a podcast episode. And this was a dream come true. Like, I wanted to do live events for the podcast, and we will do more. And Bio Komolafe is the first one we got to do. We did three nights for a fundraiser kickoff, which we're actually, by the way, doing right now. If you go into your show notes, you can click on the link for our community fundraiser. We've raised well over half our goal, and we're well on our way to $80,000 raised. So if you're listening to the podcast, please go check out our fundraiser. And I digress. These three events were the kickoff for this fundraiser that we're doing right now. And we did an open mic for one of those shows. The third night was an auction with magic and music and a DJ and wonderfully successful three nights. The middle night, though, the middle event was a live in-person conversation with Bio Komolafe. And I got to sit on the stage. I got to hug him in person. I got to have a meaningful chat that matters so much to share with you here. And I wanted to tell you, I don't love podcasts with live events. Is this the worst way for a podcast host to start their podcast? Okay, let me end with what a dream come true. So welcome, everybody. Welcome to A Dream Come True. My name is Ned Buskirk. I am your host for your favorite creatively conscious mortality podcast, You're Going to Die, the podcast. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know Bio has already been on the podcast, and absolutely go listen to that episode after you listen to this episode and this new iteration of Bio and I having a conversation, which included, of course, lots of other people. It was a sold-out event. We sold the event out so quickly after we put tickets on sale, and we did a little bit of Q&A. We had a band play some music. Singing the Bones showed up. We love them, and we love their music to round this night out. So you're getting to hear a conversation that was held really preciously with all the best elements, and I hope that translates to you well here and now. Bio Komolafe is an author, celebrated speaker, teacher, and self-styled trans-public intellectual, a concept imagined together with and inspired by the shamanic priesthood of the Yoruba healer trickster, whose vocation goes beyond justice and speaking truth to power, to opening up other spaces of power with, that's a hyphenated word, power with, and queering fond formulations and configurations of hope. I hope you enjoy the first ever live in-person event recorded for You're Going to Die, the podcast, with Bio Komolafe.
Thank you.
Okay. And if you didn't know already from the information online and the tickets and the details, this event is getting recorded for the podcast. Did you forget what it was called? All right.
Welcome, Bio. Do you like that chair or do you prefer my chair? Do you want this chair?
No,
do you want
to try it? Okay, it's fine. It's very leathery, but it'll do.
All right. I have to tell you, we shipped it in for you, okay. So there was some thought behind it.
So yesterday, I had a talk in somewhere, and. And I sat in a chair that was just like this.
Was it?
A throne.
A theme.
It was, yeah.
So. I reached out to them and asked what you sat in so I could figure out, just to create a connected theme to your holding.
Good to be here, brother.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. I do feel very emotional being here with you. And I do want to articulate something that I shared with you already, which is something maybe that we all can get a little bit of tonight. And that is rest and collapse or falling apart or dissolving a little bit. I was thinking like what I feel with you is after re-listening to the podcast conversation, I feel like I leave you with more questions than answers,
right.
and bewildered.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you relate to making people feel that way.
I come from a tradition of noticing that questions probably have a lot more to offer than the resolutions that we often squeeze them into. That a question isn't good because it arrives at an answer, right? Questions are material agents and they carry us away, and it's good, right? I'm hoping that whatever questions you have coming in here, that you don't leave with the poverty of an answer, that you leave with something more tactile, something that travels you away from the logic of a resolution. Bewilderment. Bewilderment is enrapturing. It invites you away from the economy of relations that the question and the answer are trapped in. So I hope you're carried away again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Bio. You said to me once, I love this, you were talking about your father, and you said, you said to me once, like we've talked so many times. We just talked about
it. Yeah.
You said to me once, Bio. You said, talking about your father, you said that he was brilliant. He was more brilliant than wise.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could just articulate the difference again here. Because one of the things that I feel like connects from you saying that to me is the way you told me wisdom is disruption,
right,
of movement.
Right.
It is like not uttering something.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way?
Sometimes, you know. The way I remembered my dad was as this eloquent, extremely handsome, James Brownian figure, right? You know, maybe because he loved James Brown. And I, even though I hear it's not cool, he loved Phil Collins, and I'm sticking to that story. Isn't that cool to say?
I'm sure there's
I like Phil Collins. It's okay to like Phil Collins.
Absolutely.
I'm not exactly sure why it's not cool to like Phil Collins. I like him.
Yeah, me too.
But maybe the germ of your question has to do with how I distinguish between wisdom and knowledge. And I was just sharing this with some friends today, that knowledge is thermal. It's containment. It's how we relate with each other. It's a moral field, right? It's the architecture of the room. It's how bodies are managed and how we move within those spaces. Sometimes that gets incarcerating, right? What we know could trap us, right? The postures we assume, right? Think about a moral field as as a notion of milk, right? It's the more we move in it, it curdles and thickens, and then we become trapped in it. So that wisdom isn't, there's a difference between the elder and the expert, is what I'm trying to say, right? The expert is the agent of conscience. Conscience, the etymology of conscience, is a knowing together, right? A knowing together, right? There's the expert is well-versed in the intelligence of the room. Wisdom is the interruption. It's the thing that invades, that disturbs. And it's not to be languaged. It's non-legible. It's not to be languaged as some higher divinatory knowledge or something. It's that which enters into a space and invites it to be something else. It's weird, right? I was just telling someone today that one of the root words of the elder is weird. Right? It's weird. The elder is weird. The elder is connected with, you have weird people?
Yeah.
The elder is connected with a prior generosity, right? So think about the ways that our bodies are organized within white modernity, right? White modernity being that social, economic, social, material arrangement of bodies so that bodies fulfill an instrumental function to preserve the dissociation of the self, right? That's what whiteness wants to do. Mm-hmm. It wants to...
Yes, exclamations.
It wants to preserve isolation and separability, right? Whiteness is performance.
Yeah.
It's not an identity. It's not reducible to white people. It's a performance. And bodies, non-human, more than human, we perform whiteness. Even minorities perform whiteness. Even in resisting whiteness, we can perform whiteness, right? So, and that becomes a field of containment. And then something disrupts it because whiteness as a fabric is constantly trying to hold bodies in place, trying to keep you within the plantation. What emerges? Death, loss, grief. Whiteness does not know what to do with that. It struggles. How do I pathologize this? Okay. In the DSM manual, we will name grief a pathology.
Yeah.
For 1 year, if you're grieving, there's something wrong with you. We'll lock you away, right? So wisdom, that's wisdom. Wisdom is loss. Wisdom is the fading away of our bodies. Mm-hmm. Wisdom is how our cells are diasporic, how our bodies are virtual. Wisdom is how we will never get our shit together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was...
You okay?
Yeah. I mean, really, like, talking with you the first time, it was just...
Easier? I apologize.
No. No, it was... I needed to turn the mic off, you know, because I was just sobbing constantly, you know, and crying and exclaiming. And having something named that, like, I need and I can't enact.
Right.
You know, when you say, like, to be incarcerated by these things, you know, it really, really hits.
Right.
You know, to be in a culture and a time where, you know, the drive for every opposite of that is just feels like it's in your DNA, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so when it wasn't easier. It's what I'm acknowledging now is like the exhale of hearing you say these things. To even for just right now, even though when I get off this stage, I will launch into all of my whiteness and all of my measuring and my success and my pursuit and all the stuff. But the relief of like being with this, words like that. Mm-hmm. Framing like that,
mm-hmm.
And feeling gratitude to be with you again in that way. Mm-hmm. Thank you,
brother.
Yeah. when I mentioned earlier that I could have read your bio to everybody, and that just is a waste of time, not no disrespect. Is there a way, especially specifically today, I feel like it's even how we began our first conversation, it's like, who are you right now? How are you coming in here with us? Mm.
Given I just had Italian, if you are what you eat, then I just, well, let me say that. I'm feeling a sense of like I'm missing my son, mm-hmm. right? And I had a conversation with him before I came here, and I'm missing him. Mm-hmm. So I'm a father that is in love with his son and his daughter and his wife. Mm-hmm. And I'm just missing my family, mm-hmm. and that's how I want to introduce myself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. thank mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty much what you sent me for your bio.
I'm missing myself.
It was pretty much. I mean, it was an introduction. I talked to Martin Prechtel recently for the podcast. If any of you know him, you should. Do you know his work?
Bio. Yes, mm-hmm. I do, to some extent, yeah.
When I asked him to introduce himself, he talked for 40 minutes straight, and I didn't ever get to say anything or ask anything for that whole time. And it was great, because it was a way of something that I feel like he comes from, and he holds true to, mm-hmm. both from like his Irish lineage and his indigenous lineage, but it is a way of like telling who we are from like lineage and family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I felt that with you. It was in your bio. It was like, I am father too. Mm-hmm. I am, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate the even more specific like way that it's a missing that. But that it feels that way. It feels like you introduce yourself as like part of family.
Yeah.
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 I want to launch into what felt like at first something too obvious for an event produced by something called You're Going to Die, which is death. And I was just waiting for the right moment to bring it up, but you brought it up. So thank you for bringing death in, because it does feel like a good way of talking about how we're not great at dealing with the pause or the endings or the stops or the cracks. Mm-hmm. And part of what happened listening to the podcast episode, just to get closer to you before we actually were together, was this quote that's just been sitting with me ever since then. And I'm wondering if it's like a place to kind of enter a little more into that. You said, and this matters for us to be together tonight. This matters so much for the spaces that we facilitate with our organization. This is why probably it meant so much to hear you say it. You said, when I asked you about thinking death needs a new cosmology, you said at one point, maybe death is a midwifing of community. And maybe our fear of death is a refusal to be surrounded. Can you say more about that?
I want to say that I feel that we are, just remember what I said a while ago about white modernity and what it resources. Whiteness is the orthodoxy of the obvious. It is predicated on the idea that you and I are, there's this empty space between us because you are made of your experiences and your identity and your gilded interiority and your private thoughts and feelings, your world unto yourself. It's a very Cartesian cosmology, and it's obvious, right? It's a Procrustean bed of some kind, if you know this. Greek mythology of Procrustes and how he would steal bodies from the highway and put them on his bed. And basically he would, if you were taller than the bed, he would make you fit by cutting your limbs off so you fit exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you're shorter than the bed, he would stretch your limbs out so you fit. The violence of inclusivity, right? You had to fit, right? So that obviousness, what it obscures, the clarity of precision, modernity, and its clean geometric lines, what it obscures is how bodies travel and the ancestrality that leaks in the spaces between us. Right, I think a little bit of ancestry and genetic determinism, or whatever you want to call it, is revealing some of that language. How our bodies, how our identities are also migrant. Right, the world travels in lowercase, not in categoricities, not in capital letters. Right, and that tells me, brother, that we are not as isolated as we think, you know, that we practice embodiment. Bodies are practices. And we also practice isolation because we live in the architecture that presumes we need to do that. You step into a room and you need to put on your best face, speak eloquently, put out your degrees, you know, show that you're successful or something like that. The neurotypicality of the everyday. You just have to be there, speak, you know. I like the idea that I don't have to complete my own sentences, right? That there's space, the spaces between us are not as empty as we think they are. So that's what I mean. That's what I mean by we are that death, the death. I, brother, I also want to say here that when I talk about death, I don't mean the thing that happens at the end of life, yeah. Right? Like we presume that this life is some straightforward duration and then death comes afterward. Mm-hmm. Death innervates life. Mm-hmm. Death is how life lives, mm-hmm. Right? It's, if we're not dying, if we're not fading, our cells become cancerous, then life becomes unsustainable, right? Our cells have to fly away, right, and become something else. And that's what life is, a constant embarkation. So it's this constancy of embarkation, this being carried away, that makes life possible. But this being carried away tells me that the world is filled with the energy of the yet to come, that there's so much generosity there. I don't need to look through the prism of my degree to see that I'm connected with knowledges and wisdoms that precedes and succeeds and exceeds the privacy of what I think I know, right? So in my not knowing, I'm introduced to this generosity. Mm-hmm. What was the question again?
I have no idea, honestly.
Hope that makes some sense.
Yeah,
someone slipped something into my drink.
We thought it happened. No, we joked back there that if someone slipped anything like acid or anything into Bio's drink,
he would actually make sense.
Yeah, he would start making sense.
If I normally don't.
How do you die with so many people looking to you?
How do you die with so many people?
Yeah, looking to you, you know? I mean, I feel like this is like a measurement for something, like people coming, seeking, you know, from you. Feels very like real. Is it a part of your lived experience? I mean, do you feel that now? You feel that coming from your event last night? You feel that coming in here with a sold out, you know, show?
Do you see what I mean? Like, how do you die in the face of that? Yeah.
Yeah. I think the seeking is a form of dying. I think we're exhausted with being isolated. The reason why we're here is because a foreign force has summoned us. Like, something has summoned us, and it's not languageable yet. It's a different politics. It's not partisan. It will not depend on votes, but a politics has brought us here.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. And we're here because something is dying, brother. Something is dying. And this thing that's dying is... This dying is a carrying away, like I said. I don't know why I keep on mentioning being carried away. Maybe because I was recently in Ghana and my sister was... on part of those journeys. In Ghana, I was in the dungeon where black bodies were kept, and thousands. And I remember sitting there in the darkness of what we would rudely call a room, but it's, I mean, that would be rude. No room should be, there's no architect, that's not the architecture of hospitality. Mm-hmm. It's hideous. And I sat there and I learned the history of that place, the bodies that sat there. And I remember just falling to the ground, murky, damp, and I felt it was libated with the tears, the intergenerational tears of people that had gone before. My fathers and uncles and mothers and sisters. And I was left alone there. And I started to rap or something. It felt like rapping. It felt like slam poetry. It felt like prophecy. But I just started to speak into the void and acknowledge the bodies that were there. I also started to say things like, the surface is... You know, every modernity surface is subsidized by the dungeon, right? By bent backs, right? The thesis of modernity is premised on the prosthetic bodies of the discardable, the necropolitics that presumes that some bodies are not worthy enough. That's what built the flatness of the surface. And I felt now the surface is in crisis. It's cracking. It doesn't know how to hold the buoyancy of our claims to finality. And so it's withering. It's hollowing out. White modernity is hollowing out. Mm-hmm. It's climate chaos. It's the pandemic. It's the rise of ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And we're questioning, are you human? Even our laptops are asking us the same question. Mm-hmm. When we browse, are you human? Prove you're human by clicking on these boxes. So there's a crisis. there's a crisis of form.
Yes, right.
We're in a crisis of form where our claims to finality are being called to question by the very paradigms we supposedly became masters of. And I started to say in that dark place that somehow the discarded stone has become the chief cornerstone. And it might yet be the case that a dungeon becomes sanctuary, that the engine room of oppression becomes sanctuary. Mm-hmm. That maybe we have to descend. Just, I love the way we descended into this place. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is a descending, catastrophe literally means the descending into the, you know. So maybe there is a descending into the earth that needs to happen. So we are descending. Home is getting lost. Identity is becoming a lot more fickle. right? The boxes that modernity preserved for us to keep ourselves in are becoming more permeable. And there is an invasion of tenderness, right? So all the impervious ways that we move through the earth are now becoming less and less sustainable. Yeah. And that is how I feel we are dying together. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, tenderness. I really love that. Do you remember what I asked you? My question?
This one?
This one.
How I'm...
Yeah. Do you feel... I want to highlight that as like... is that a way of your being with... You know, I think of that as when I was in, you know, We Will Dance with Mountains. It was like, that's what I was with. I was with like your tenderness enhanced by like curiosity and questions and, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think death is performative, and when it is the case that people are coming to listen, like I said, this is a politics. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need me or any other figure, mm-hmm. right? This death, this creativity, this vast enterprise of body making or body unmaking is enlisting wisdom mm-hmm. to create something else we don't know, mm-hmm. right? So my dying is your dying. We are dying together, right? It's more than declaration, it's poetry. Mm-hmm. There's something about this time that is inviting us to die together. So I feel that's the most inviting, prophetic way that I feel invited to, yeah. to speak to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, just in the middle of the show, like usual, there's just a couple of house cleaning things that we need to deal with. One of them is to remind you that we are currently doing our annual community fundraiser. So if you go into the show notes, just click the Give Butter link and go in there. Yeah, it's a real platform, okay? It's not fake. It's real, and we've already raised $50,000 for this year's fundraiser. We're on our way to $80,000, and by the way, every contribution will be matched. So please go and support what we're up to with our prison program, our hospice program, our work with cancer patients, our work with exonerees. Boy, there's so much going on. And for us to do it, we need your support. And to make it sustainable, we need your support. Go and click that link. You can also Venmo or PayPal us or become a patron on Patreon. Even better, support the podcast. And by supporting the podcast, support everything we're up to with our 501c3 nonprofit. Please do that. Thank you. Now, one thing I haven't done much here at all, I've read a bunch of reviews from people through Apple Podcasts, but did you know if you're listening on Spotify, you can comment on all the episodes individually? On Apple Podcasts, you can just do one rating and review. With Spotify, you can leave notes like this one that was left for our episode with Sonia Renee Taylor. Charlotte Bill said, "The best thing I have ever listened to. I need to go and process. So grateful to you all. Finally feeling more at peace with my 6 house Scorpio birth chart too." Ha ha! That is a reference to the podcast. You got to listen to the episode if you haven't. It's a worthwhile one. Laura Nardon. It's funny. I don't know if I'm reading these names correctly through Spotify, but Laura said, "I can't wait to listen to it again. So many important things were said. I love every interview I've ever heard with Sonia." Let's see if I can pull another one for you. Rachel Cargill was on the show recently. Here's a comment for Rachel's episode. "Thank you so much to Rachel and you, You're Going to Die, the podcast, for sharing your grieving process and for speaking your truth. I loved it." So, hey, this is encouragement to you. If you're listening to the podcast on Spotify, please rate the podcast with some stars. We are slowly climbing almost to 200 ratings. And leave a comment on this episode, for example. What did it mean to you? Let us know. We're reading them, and we might even read them here on the podcast. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
I feel compelled to open up like the well of questions that are out there. I wasn't really feeling like having like a Q&A, but I just kind of want to give this audience, maybe some of you, a chance to like open up some little portals. So does that feel okay to throw you to the wolves? Yeah. I understand there was a coyote out in the street, like running by. So I feel like the wildness of the night, and like coyote was like in the line with all of you, wanting to get down here to like be with us. So I feel this wild audience. So let's do that real quick. Let's open it up. If you want to raise your hand, if you have a question, I'll repeat it into the microphone here, but we also kind of have the audience mic, so it'll pick it up probably plenty. What's your name?
Poindexter.
Poindexter, what you got?
Poindexter.
I'm not sure how to articulate the question. I heard you talking to Josh Schrey this week too.
Okay.
And I was at a kids' basketball game, so I couldn't quite get this out, but there's something about dissolving the individual, mm-hmm. or at least contextualizing it, embedding it, entangling it, that I feel from your work. Mm-hmm. And there's also a part of this containment that I love. Mm-hmm. And I think that even in a world that's, you could call it rudely post-individual, mm-hmm. even in that world, there's something magical that can happen at the sight of what we call an individual. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's some kind of rhapsody for bringing an individual back into a kind of post-individual context.
I'm not going to be able to repeat that question.
I get it. I hear you, brother. Poindexter. I hear you.
Okay.
So I'm going to answer this way, and I'll come to the question directly, but I'll just come through a different neighborhood, right? People often ask me what love is, and I shared this yesterday, and they say love is a bridge. And I often say, I don't think love is a bridge. A bridge is a connection between two stable points, right? A and B. I'm so enraptured by a world that is not made of things or dots. It's made of lines, right? It's made of movement, right? The eye that presumes it starts the world or it meets the world is preceded by something, right? So it's not the eye that moves, it's the thing that moves the eye that moves. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I often respond by saying that love is not a bridge, it's a hyphen. Something about a hyphen cuts into the flesh of the things that are that you can presuppose as independent of each other. Why I say that is, it's not that you're an individual and now we are moving into a post-individual world, right? It's that the individual is already a crossroads, right? You're not a highway that is about to get crossed by the post-individual. You're already a crossroad. To touch yourself is to touch the manifold, right? The individual is just a civilian and why did I use the word civilian? it's just a temporary way of seeing how it's convenient. It's a very convenient way of languaging how bodies come together. But you are, if I were to trace what's happening to you now, I have to bring in the entire world. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just a morsel of that. Poindexter is not sitting on a chair right now. Poindexter is Poindexter hyphenated chair, right? You're the technology of the breakfast you had this morning. You are the cross-section of ancestrality still happening. You might think that you have thoughts on your own, right? But microbes are doing numbers on you, right? Yeah. In your tummy. You might think, for instance, that I made the choice to wear this jacket because I like jeans and I love those Snickers, right? But it might just be that and I'm just going to borrow from the Devil Wears Prada. Yeah.
Just waiting for what movie here.
That a committee made it for you. A committee made that decision for you. Mm-hmm. You thought that I'm an impervious magisterial consumer, and I went to the shopping mall and I made this decision. It's my decision, my choices. But even our choices, the things we want, how we desire, how we think, what we eat, all of these are the assemblages, the manifold, you know, movements of the world at large. It's not you, brother. We are a web of relations. Mm. So we're already in a post-individual world. We've never been in a world that is relegated to the individual. If we start from the individual, we're already too late. Mm. Right. Does that make sense? So even your love for yourself, like, I like this form, is your ancestor saying, I like this form. It's the village saying that, yes, right? There's right. Nothing, there's no singularity. I'm not a transhumanist. There's no singularity to approach where we are melted into some goop. And that goop is what we call the post-individual. The invitation of post-humanism is to notice that we are already indebted to flows, right? Modernity is the idea that, no, you're free. You're okay. You know, make your choice, mm. Right? But the idea here is that you are a territory and have never ceased being so. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. After all that, what I want to focus on is the Devil Wears Prada reference. There is something so wonderful about what I think is I consider like an approach of Western culture, kind of. Right. How often when I listen to you speak, you're referencing like the movie Contact with Jodie Foster or right. Batman right. or like what's the Death Love Robot?
I'm a nerd, yeah, brother, yeah. I'm a nerd.
So you're a nerd, but then also, I'm sorry, I'm not saying that you are. You said
I am.
That.
Okay, I am.
You're a nerd.
I am.
I never thought during Proud. This interview I'd say that you're a nerd, but I did just say that. But I wonder about that. Though too, as a, I think about where you come from and mm-hmm. your people. You've referenced like the Yoruba people,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about like what are the ways you talk and be there. When I think about you being with your family, I think about like you said, maybe it offers you like when your son looks at you the chance to fall apart because he falls apart. Mm-hmm. And out here in this space with these eyes and this listening, there is a way that you maybe can't fully fall apart, and maybe there's a way that modernity in this context is like pulling forth a like, how can I bring something of that knowing from what you miss with your family here? And then for some reason, for me, the way in is like, well, the way in is the Devil Wears Prada. The way in is Batman. Mm-hmm. The way in is, you know. So the question I'm getting at is, you know, what is the being here in modernity, in white modernity, in this context, in this context, what is the way into us that's different from the way into your family or your people? Mm. Do you see what I'm asking?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there, like I said, there's performance. And I want to differentiate between performativity and performance. Bodies are practices. Yes, we practice this. But what I've started to say as, or mention or speak about as neurotypicality, by that I mean a system of values that whose main goal is to create proper bodies, right? Good bodies, right? What's a good body? A good body is useful. And you're useful to the degree that you're instrumental to predetermined ends, right? So what's the end here? to flatten the world, to make spaces of that are safe. Yeah. And by safe, I mean safe from the wild hordes of things outside of the citizen subject, right? Mm-hmm. White modernity is the creation, the manufacturing of bodies, right? And what it tells us all the time is put yourself together. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Get yourself together. Regulate, you know, don't fall apart. Mm-hmm. And I was trained in the discipline of keeping people together. Mm-hmm. Like, as a psychologist, I want you to be together. I want you to be together long enough for you to be productive. Right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't articulate it this way while I was being trained, but I learned quickly the hidden curriculum of my discipline.
Yeah.
That is to police bodies so that they stay well. And wellness here is the level of your instrumentality. This is the reason why my colleague and friend, Professor Wendy Holloway, would say psychology is a policeman of capitalism, right? Or Erin Mannion would say psychology polices the cracks. Whiteness polices the cracks, mm-hmm. right? What it wants to do is to keep you together, mm-hmm. right? But there is something, an unknown gift to falling apart, right? And everything that grows seems to need falling apart. A seed dropping into the ground, if it keeps itself whole, then there is no forest, right?
Yeah.
It needs to split up and fall apart.
Yeah.
And
grief is generative. You
there
said that.
You go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's mutiny against the incarceration of wholeness. So we would need that kind of falling apart. I feel, brother, that the being at home means is the permission to fall. Is wherever I feel permitted or invited to fall and not perform that neurotypicality, that feels homely for me.
Yeah.
So when you ask me the question, when you say how do you show up, how do you introduce yourself, mm-hmm. there's a way the question lands that could just be another question. I've done 1,000 interviews. And okay, here's another question saying, who are you, bio? Okay, I could go through that motion. And then there's the information that your tiers are offering. Your tiers is like offering different data. Mm-hmm. Like saying, yeah, I care about that question that I ask, but I'm also inviting you to do something else, mm-hmm. to cry, to forget about regulating. And then I touch something else. You know, I'm able to access beyond my PhDs and say, yeah, the PhD doesn't matter now. I see. My son matters now. Mm-hmm. And then we give each other permission to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. As men, again, mm-hmm. we perform this other thing. Mm-hmm. Men are not supposed to cry, we hear, mm-hmm. all the time. You know, you're supposed to be, James Brown's is a man's world and all of that. Mm-hmm. But then we give ourselves permission to be tender. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes an infection. And then we infect everyone here in the room. And everyone lives here sick. Sick and revolutionary.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Thank you, Bio. There's water, by the way, on the floor next to you. If you want some water. Okay, fine. Let's do a question here. Yes.
So, Bio.
What's your name?
Mutima. What is this looming fear that makes us march to the order of a beat that is killing us?
What is this looming fear that makes us march to an order that is killing us?
So, I think it's... it would seem to me that this thing is like a pheromonic secretion. It's like what ants are led by. It's like a chemical. Well, at some point, some people were looking for human pheromones. I don't think they found one. But maybe I mentioned, just hold on to the conceptual space of the human secretion, that we are not led or guided by rationality, Right. The idea that we reason and calculate and we divine our path forward from those calculations is so inadequate. And what feels more forceful is noticing that we are parts of territories and we infect each other in some way by the intelligence of the territory. I feel desire at some level, you know, is marshalling our bodies to prefer certain realities to others. The question about why we make the choices we make or why we are led by fear in some way, and we prefer our shackles, so to our imprisonment, to what feels like an obvious other thing, has a prestigious history. You know, that question was a question for Deleuze and Guattari and Toscaël and Jean Henri, all these French philosophers. They were always asking, why do people look at their pain and continue to choose it? You know, why would they look at a dictator and say, yep, that's the guy that I want? Why do they do that? If we start from choice, if we just say they choose it, I think we're obscuring a whole lot of things. I think that we are habituated and trained and manufactured to orient our bodies in the direction of the familiar, right? Of what feels obvious, right? And so if you're brought up in a family structure that has a strong patriarch and you were taught to obey, and obedience came with some kind of reward structure, you will probably transit to a job where hierarchy feels secure. Mm-hmm. And the security of that would lead and bleed into a society where we only gain security from a sort of a feeling of being dominated over. And then that domination becomes the quest for a strong man and all of that. So all of these systems are connected. You know, Deleuze will call that desire, right? And desire is not what we feel. Desire is the history of how bodies become bodies, right? So I feel, sister, that we are, when we're talking about fear and when we're talking about shackles and when we're talking about questionable preferences, maybe even addiction, we're talking about desire. We're talking about things, principalities and powers, things that are beyond human, right? And that is where loss comes as potentially emancipatory, right? Because it enters the picture it deterritorializes it, and then we lose our way. The reason why Yoruba people say, in order to find your way, you must lose it, right? So loss is potentially salvific.
Yeah, you said once that, like the Matrix, you know, your dad's death at 15 years old was like taking the pill, you know, that broke reality for you. I mean, that's what you're speaking to, that level of loss.
Because we are, and I need to stress this, that it's so invisible. I want you to understand the risk of the obvious. Right. What is obvious is already the politics of the obscured. Right. Every time you look at something, I learned it this way in India. Name the color, blind the eye. If you name the color, you're obscuring something else, right? That's blue, but you immediately commit to that. It's like a wave collapse function, quantum physics. Immediately you commit to that, then there's an agreement, and then that pushes away and excludes everything, the other realities that are possible there, right? So every time we do that, we push aside some other thing that the world is wanting to do. So I feel that we are in such a time of loss that It seems like the gravitational pull of the world is pulling us to the ground, but we're so habituated into being rectilinear citizen subjects. This is the posture of excellence. Your back is straight, your head is high, right? This is how we're taught to walk on the streets, right? And there's something obscured in that rectilinearity. It's the reason why I say that there is a becoming animal that needs to happen now. There's a falling to the earth. There's a fetal position to adopt. No slave escaped from the plantation with their head held high. They had to become animal. They had to wade in the water. They had to romance the earth. They had to paint their faces and hide their bodies. They had to perform hiding as courage, right? And I think we're so enamored with our postures, and that posture is an ontological burden on the planet. So we need other forms to take root.
Thank you, Bio. Yeah, give it up to Bio, please. Bio said, like, let's not be, like, you know, bound by time tonight. And I have no idea what time it is. Can someone tell me what time it is?
9:20.
Great. I want to thank you so much, Bio, for your generosity and your work and your, like, falling apart and your offering tender places, tender invitations for our own breaking.
Yeah.
I am changed and grateful for all your words and work and conversations like this. Like, what an honor to, like, be here with you and all of you.
Thank you.
In this way.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. One more time, if you all wouldn't mind giving up for Bio Kamala.
Big love and gratitude to Bio Kamalafe. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Bio, for making the time to come visit us in San Francisco to make this event happen, to saying yes to us recording it and releasing it here on the podcast. What a once-in-a-lifetime experience and the beginning of more to come, I suspect. So all of you, this will not be the last time we record a live event. In fact, we've got some special things in the works. Stay tuned. If you want to connect to Bio and Bio's community, please go into the show notes and I'll include all the links, the best ways to get involved and connected to Bio and what he's up to in the world. And thank you all, community, for listening. Thank you for supporting what we're up to. Remember, we are in the middle of a major annual community fundraiser. So if you have even just $5 to spare, go into our show notes and click the Give Butter link and support our fundraiser now. Every contribution will be matched until we reach our goal of $80,000. This is real, people. So please go and support the fundraiser and share it with your community and share everything we're up to with your community. Like this podcast, right now, as I finish talking to you, just take the app, find the link for the show, and send it to someone you care about who needs this kind of medicine or entertainment. We don't have to be dramatic, although life feels dramatic. So when I say medicine, I mean it. And hopefully this was entertaining too. If not, we'll keep working on it. Good balance, y'all. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.